Hey guys, it's me, Chris Denson, Innovation Crush. Now look, around here we're not exactly the web designing type, but we just started creating an amazing website using Weebly. And honestly, I still can't believe how easy it all works. First of all, Weebly was created for people like me with the courage to start their own business and the dream to be their own boss. No one tells me what to do on this show. Again, you don't need to be a web designer or know how to code to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Now, personally, we were all like really impressed with the wide variety of professionally designed, mobile-friendly themes to choose from. And then all we had to do was drag and drop to quickly build and publish the site. Way too easy. And we can truly customize, update, and change the site anytime we want on any device. So look, here's what I suggest you do. Join the over 30 million people who are already dreaming big with Weebly. Get started today with a free trial at weebly.com/crush. That's weebly.com/crush. weebly.com/crush. All right, everybody, welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush. It's me, Chris Denson, and today I'm sitting here with Brian Wong. Say hello, Brian.
Hey, everybody.
All right, so if you guys are tuning in for the first time, you know, you don't know that the show covers all things innovation, ideas, creativity, fun people doing smart stuff in the marketplace. So, Brian, for the sake of me not botching an intro, kind of do the 90-second version of who Brian Wong is.
Sure. So I'm Brian Wong. I'm the founder and CEO of Keep. I'm a Canadian, born and raised in Vancouver, so West Coast all the way. I moved down to San Francisco in 2010, originally working at another company called Digg, DIGG.com, and then I got laid off and ended up deciding to start my own company. And Keep was based on a very simple premise that instead of having an ad show up when you're using your apps on your phone, why not be rewarded? Why not, let's say, level up in a game and, you know, Gatorade could be there to reward you, or Starbucks, or whatever it might be. So the idea was to bring brands into a meaningful moment with a better mechanism, which was a reward. So that company has been the company I've been running since 2010. It's now you know, close to 100 people, San Francisco, New York. We're obviously a lot more later stage now. We've raised some more VC money. But that, in a nutshell, is who I am and what I'm doing.
How did the idea for Keep, like, you tell a really great origin story, like how this all came to be, and just kind of like having that, what do you call it, the sixth sense? Like it's just all starting to make sense.
So the idea came to me actually when I was on a flight. I remember walking up and down the aisles, and I do what I call an aisle creep, which is very good.
I'm
marketing.
Known as an aisle creep too.
Totally.
It's very different.
Other reasons, yeah. Okay. There's a lot of great market research you can get from planes just because you see people on their phones when they're bored. What are they doing? And I noticed that a lot of people are playing games. And it then hit me as an entrepreneur, especially when you observe behavior that's growing so exponentially, you're probably trying to figure out why. And in my case, I figured out that there were these achievements that you would hit and you would be addicted to them because they feel good. It's like this dopamine rush. So if there's this dopamine rush, and if there's one thing I learned in consumer behavior, it was that brands love to be there when you're having that dopamine rush. That's why they sponsor stadiums, and that's why they're in every sports game. They want to be there when you're at that high. So we said if we could just find all those mini highs and kind of all the different things we do every day on our phones and then bring brands in there in a meaningful way, potentially there could be something interesting. So that's how we started it.
How much of a creep are you? Like how observant of a person?
Here's one thing I tell everyone, even in big companies, small companies, startups, entrepreneurs, is, you know, your sense of curiosity is one that you should never lose, primarily because that's what makes you youthful. And a lot of people do comment on my age, they comment on my energy, they comment on my my observations, and a lot of that comes from just you being constantly curious about everything. And so that was what led me to this, was why?
Right.
And then you go in and you may not know the solution, but other people's research might have led to something that could be a solution.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the pieces of research that led me to specifically picking out the model for rewarding people on a surprise and delight basis, so the rewards are not expected. The consumer doesn't know when they're going to get rewarded. I was reading a book called Predictably Rational by Dan Ariely, and there was a section that talked about positive intermittent reinforcement, which is, in English, just surprise and delight things. And so the idea of that being a part of our model just seemed natural, and so we just did it, and right. it worked out.
Cool. And do you think, because we talk a lot about being like being culturally curious, and like especially a lot of innovators are always in the state of like wonder in the world. Do you think that that's a skill that can be taught? Like, is that, you know, when you go and talk to groups, like, I want to be creative, but I don't, like, you know, is that something that you feel like is a natural thing, or is it, you can learn it?
It's very natural. Every human being has it from the day we're born to the day we die. And I think the way you accentuate it or you take it, bring it out of you is through travel. And it doesn't have to be expensive travel. I'm talking just going to different cities, going to different areas of your city, exploring. The physical act of exploring, I think, takes out that part of you, because you have to adapt by nature of where you're going if it's a different environment. If you're always staying in the same circle, both people and regions and places, you will begin to think in a stale way. So by going to different places, meeting more people and seeing different places, and adapting to those places, spending good time there, is incredibly important.
Are you well-traveled?
I mean, I my definition of it is very different than others. It's all relative. No, it's relative. And I think there's two categories of travel. There's business travel, and then there's sort of cultured, immersive travel.
Right.
And sometimes you can combine the two. And that's what I try to do whenever I go to different places.
So in that instance, is Keep a global brand? And do people consider reward the way you defined it, you know, valuable in other parts of the world?
So it's been 5 years. So we're now active in 30 countries. We support 27 languages. It's obviously different levels of scale. Now China is our second biggest region. Canada, UK, Australia, so a lot of the Anglo countries as well. We found that there are varied cultural responses to rewards, but most of them are positive. So it's always at a baseline of good, okay, I'm receptive to it, and then people crazy about it. So, for example, in Japanese culture, rewards and surprise is a big part of it. And, you know, you've heard of the New Year's goodie bag. It's just baked into a lot of the ways that the traditional culture has evolved, where rewards, gifting, surprises are a part of that sort of thinking. So it's very universal rewarding. It's just the way people receive it is very different. And so the way you accomplish certain goals for different brands also vary as well.
So the mechanism by which you actually get there becomes a little bit different, or the point of reward becomes?
Well, the mechanism is the same, but then the response is different. And the response, if it's the response that the brand's looking for, then great. If it's not, then you move on to the next thing. So it's always being conscious of what the responses are like.
So give us a key, I don't want to say case study, but like an example of Keep in action and, you know.
Yeah. There's one very recent example that's been well publicized that's just my favorite. I love sharing it. Is a brand actually that's based here in SF, it's a global brand, but their U.S. headquarters is here. It's Campari. So Campari has brands like Sky Vodka, Wild Turkey Bourbon, American Honey, and people are probably wondering, wait, what reward would these guys give out? I mean, you can't technically give out alcohol. It's illegal, although that would be awesome. But the reward they actually chose to give was a Uber and a Lyft credit. The idea was to use their CSR budget, which was largely used for very simple messaging of, you know, drink responsibly. Exactly. That's it. But it's. I think it's. They're regulated to spend.
I enjoy drinking, driving, and texting.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The way they spend their dollars is actually, I think, mandated by regulation in CSR. So they said, well, why couldn't we do something more innovative? And so the idea of surprising someone with a free Uber or Lyft credit is like, hey, here's a free credit for a safe ride home. And it was all embedded into the 4,000 apps that were already in. And it would be, for example, based on different apps, like an app where you might be looking for a restaurant, or when you're booking a table, or when you're looking at drink recipes. These are all moments that Campari could be there and to reward you. So that accomplished three things. The first is it was a way to actually encourage consumption, because now you know that this is a safe ride to get home, right? Second was to show Campari as a corporate social brand. And the third was to use their budget in a much more creative way. Right. And these were three things that eventually led to them taking the program into another level, which was CRM. So we call it CSR to CRM. Thank you to three-letter acronyms and how well they've been adopted in the marketing world. It totally flows, yeah. but CSR to CRM was like an internal code name for this program because, you know, it's hard to do CRM and loyalty and spirits because, you know, you don't want someone to sign up to the Sky loyalty program. This has a lot of doesn't really have a good ring to it. Yeah, you don't want to be mayor of a booze. So we said let's use this as a way for people to align to the brand and respond to it positively and be a part of their CRM programs.
That's great. You're obviously a young guy and you have a pretty good origin story. If I'm correct, high school graduated at 14, college graduated at 18.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's a high level of intellect. And I think there are other people like you, there's kids that grew up like you, and there's this thinking, or even statistically, that, you know, people whose talents are not discovered or nurtured, especially if they're high-functioning individuals, especially academically, become social outcasts, and there's a high suicide rate among geniuses, and, what did your parents do to kind of nurture your gift?
This is a fantastic question. I love sort of going head-on with this, because my parents actually didn't want me to skip grades. They were the ones against it. Yes, and I will admit, you know, the Asian parenting stereotype that you might have thought that they were the ones that that was encouraging that. But they said, no, we're worried it's going to stifle your development socially. And the reason why I was able to get through, at least I think I turned out okay, is my brother is 4 years older than me. And I had someone to look to guide me from a social norm standpoint. What is normal? Who knows? It's all, again, relative as well. And so that was one reason that I think everything kind of worked out from a social development standpoint. And then I think the other
is... jealous that you guys are in the same grade?
Listen, my brother and I are very different people. And he doesn't want to kill me. We're totally chill. We graduated college at the same time. Right. It's like, it was really funny. But, you know, he has his own career path. He's extremely successful at what he does. He actually works at a very well-known up-and-coming brand called Herschel Bags.
Which, I love Herschel.
Yep. See, yeah. So he's doing extremely well. Yeah, he's already.
Actually, let's end this interview.
Yeah, exactly. So he's doing great. But in terms of, and he went through so many different subject matters and ended up landing on to fashion as something that he wanted to do, which I'm so happy for him for doing those things. The other thing I would point out is, you know, you mentioned the nurturing part, which immediately made me think about Outliers. And, you know, Malcolm Gladwell wrote about how, you know, this whole anecdotal, I mean, most of his books are pretty anecdotal, but the whole idea of, you know, if you're young, you get, and you're told you're smart, you will believe you're very smart and you will do the things that smart kids do. And then they'll also support you as if you're smart. And if you were told that you were dumb and you get put into a program that doesn't have the types of resources to that seemingly would be aligned to a kid that was deemed smart, it would be very different. So I think I luckily was able to benefit from the "we think you're smart" bucket, but it was because of fantastic academic professionals that were around me that were able to identify that I was gifted. Now, do I agree with the term gifted? It's a bit controversial, but the whole point was that they had plucked me out and put me into different programs.
Right.
And the way to actually look for this sometimes is very counterintuitive. The way you find gifted children sometimes is to look for the ones that are struggling or seeming to not do well in class because they're the ones that are bored out of their minds and don't want to play ball with the way that the academic system works. And so it's really interesting. So you look for the lowest performing kids to find the smartest ones. Isn't that interesting? Yes. And I would actually say that smarts and giftedness are two very different things. Intelligence could be a measure of memory, could be a measure of creativity. Mm-hmm. Memory and creativity, as you know, are very different concepts. And so the way that we need to nurture children in the future that have that mix is very different. And that's why education is a huge passion point of mine. I think that I had hacked the system to get out of school 4 years early with a degree underneath my belt. A lot of them have just dropped out, as you know. It seems to be the thing to do as an entrepreneur. But even as a non-entrepreneur, there are kids that don't agree with the fact that there's a standard amount of time for you to go through school. How is it possible that we're all so different, born and raised in different conditions, yet we all get given the same education?
Right.
It's bizarre.
I would imagine from a systemic standpoint, it's hard for the edge. And this is a problem that's trying to be solved from so many different angles.
Well, this is a global issue. Yeah, exactly. And the thing I would say is you know, with technology, luckily, because we're in a world where that now is very pervasive, I think we can solve a lot of these issues from a scalable education and custom education standpoint. But I think we could probably talk about that for hours. I mean, this is just a huge area that I think will create a new generation of creators, and already is being a problem that's tackled head on by a lot of these modern education companies like the General Assemblies of the world.
Right. Why did you decide, if, you know, like I said, if some drop out and go the entrepreneurial route immediately, why did you decide to stick with a formal education?
Well, because that was a one Asian parenting sort of consequence was you need to get a degree.
Is there a place for Keep in education, especially like what you're talking about, like
yeah.
sort of the rewards?
Lots of places. We actually work with a lot of learning apps that take, you know, language learning, for example, and make it fun through rewards. So we are very proud of the fact that we have just this applicability into so many categories.
That's awesome. How do we, just going back to the educational point for a
yeah,
second.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you talk about identifying them. How do we encourage more, you know, more young academic achievers to take a similar, I mean, maybe
yeah.
not the exact
yeah.
path, obviously, but just
there's two ways to do it. One is add a new language into the curriculum, and the second is exposure. The first is a little bold, but I think much like Spanish, English, French, coding should be another language that youth should be encouraged to learn. Gender neutral. The second is exposure. So they're hand in hand, because then if you know, the kids know that, you know, being Elon is very possible, and Elon's a bit extreme. I'm talking maybe
sure.
just anyone who's an entrepreneur
Me.
And building tech companies like you, yeah, and myself. And I think if you understand that this stuff is possible, it becomes very powerful, and then they have the desire to learn. And I think the thing is, the you know, you think about when you were a kid, what you wanted to be
right.
when you grew up was the exposure. And NASA had this stronghold on exposure for dreams to kids, because
right.
everyone wanted to be an astronaut, because you knew it was possible. If you did not even know that we were going to space, you wouldn't even think of being an astronaut as a
right.
possible career. So these are all things that I'm hoping more and more youth will be exposed to over time.
Well, that's great, because I think also, you know, a lot of conversation like underserved areas is always like, we don't know what we don't know. So,
yeah,
so like,
exactly.
I don't know that the astronaut, you know, of...
Yeah.
You know, coding exists, right?
Yes.
Like and so you don't have that as an aspect.
And it applies all throughout our education, even
yeah.
in university. For example, when I was in university, I went to business school as my undergrad, because you can do that in Canada. And one of the things that was the most popular, and it was a huge issue for me, one of the most popular career choices out of school was being an accountant. The reason is because the top exposed careers and sponsors and companies that would support
right.
all of our school programs were the Big Four.
Yeah.
So I don't blame them. It was a very smart strategy for them. But I also, at the same time, needed to personally extract myself, go to places like San Francisco, LA, New York, Chicago, and then just see that, my gosh, there were tons of other careers that exist that you don't even know about when you're going through college. If you didn't study advertising, or if you didn't get exposed to the advertising or media world, a lot of the careers in that space you wouldn't
yeah.
even be aware of, right? It's
well,
really
it's interesting
crazy.
Interesting too, because I think about like the localization, like where you are. Like, so I grew up in Michigan,
of course.
Went to Michigan State.
Yeah,
obviously, like the car business is there, so they have so many engineering
yeah.
programs.
Agreed.
Which is what I chose, right?
Yeah.
There wasn't like if you know, being maybe in San Francisco or LA
yeah.
or different, like maybe the skew
of
the
course.
Offerings.
But that's
within.
The global nature of education,
right.
and why again technology can revolutionize this. I want the kid growing up in Bangladesh to learn about data science
yeah.
and become fascinated by that. And these
like
are the things that... Exactly. And these, and that's why they said the next Bill Gates will not be from America.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I think the other part of intellect is emotional intelligence.
Of course.
Right? So kind of like, yes, you had your older brother, but I think also as you entered the business world, there are obviously some gaps you had to close. You've spoken about this before in terms of how you strategically made sure like your areas of weakness or so, like whatever it
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people would look at their youth or something as a crutch or as a weakness. And I always tell people, you can take what is perceived to be a weakness and turn into a strength. It's like a Jedi mind trick, right? And the way you do it is just look at the advantage. If you constantly tell yourself that looking young, people aren't going to take yourself seriously, it's just you're going to continue to convince yourself that. But if you're young, people are expecting you to be innovative. They will underestimate you. You can ask tons of questions and learn as much as you can. You can ask anything, really.
Right.
You're licensed to learn. These are all strengths, and you should continue to really hound on that. And then I think similarly from an overall perspective, you know, I believe in nurturing at some point in your life more of your strengths rather than your weaknesses. I think a lot of folks spend way too much time trying to fix their weaknesses because through school we were told, oh, you got a C here, you got to do better. And right. Yes, that makes sense to a certain point in your development as a human being. But there is a point where you realize that, yeah, you know, this is just not my yep. thing. I've learned how much I need to learn to know that it exists and that I know that I can find people better at right. me than that.
Right.
Things like I know that finance exists and I know that there are contracts and budgets and things that need to be handled by people, and those things can be handled by others who are really, really good at it.
Right.
And then I will do what I know that I'm really good at, which is I'm really good at getting people super excited about stuff. Mm-hmm. And so that is my talent, and I will continue to sharpen that and be good at it.
What are some tactics you use to get people excited about stuff?
I like to raise my eyebrows a lot. I like to sort of increase the volume of my voice right at the beginning to wake people up. I love sort of surprising people. It's always about using things that they don't expect. So, for example, formats of typical meetings are, you know, guy comes in, here's the agenda, da-da-da-da-da. If you come in and you be like, hey, what are you guys, like, what's the brainstorm? Let's start with the brainstorm right now. Let's do that right now and then go another. And just catching people off guard is a way to get them excited, because now you're making different parts of their brain light up and
right.
then they're just not stale. They're just not sitting there like a piece of bread for a long time. And so that, to me, is extremely effective. The other is taking people out of their element, right?
Yeah.
So getting people into events, finding them at events, being refreshingly sort of personal with them, right? I think typically, and by the way, why would I get people excited about stuff? Obviously, it's for sales reasons,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So let's just be honest. But what one thing that people realize is typical sales tactics is so obvious. But if you're actually there genuinely to know someone as a person
right.
because they're interesting and you're not just looking at them as a checkbook. For example, my opening line when I went to the CMO of MasterCard was, hey, Roger, everyone probably thinks that you're like a walking ATM, right? And he's like, yeah. But I'm not. And immediately
right.
it was like, that's just that.
Yeah.
So you establish rapport just by knowing more about who you are spending time with.
Right.
And that inevitably leads to doing business with each other. But my perspective on that is very simple. You'll do business with someone if you like them and if you know you can help each other. That's the bottom line. It doesn't matter about anything else.
Yeah.
This is literally the way in life is you get around getting things done by being nice to people.
It's like building a genuine connection, right?
Exactly.
And not just like a transactional relationship.
Correct. So that's with every relationship in business and in personal. You have very transactional, and this is one of the advantages of being right across from a fire hall. No, seriously. There's literally a fire station
oh.
right across
oh,
the street.
Totally
yeah.
different. All right,
yeah.
cool. Are there Dalmatians here?
No, actually. I haven't seen any. That'd be funny.
So as you have scaled, right, as a business person, you know, what's been, I don't know, have there been any surprises that have popped up for you, you know, especially when you just hit the 24, 25 mark? What surprised you the most along this entrepreneurial journey so far?
The early days, the surprising thing was just how difficult it is to let go of control, right? You're a huge control freak.
Yeah.
You want everything to be perfect. And then also realizing that your perfect is very different than other people's perfect. And your job is to enable them to get to their perfect, not to get to your perfect. And that is a huge realization that I think helped me a lot throughout the early stages of the company. The second most surprising thing was just how difficult it is to hire senior talent and to maintain and to build that talent. I'm talking C-level executives as well. It's just extremely difficult.
Yeah.
You have so many things that lead up to that hire, especially when you're at that point where you need to hire a CRO or a COO or a CMO or whatever you want. Those are not exactly a walk in the park type recruits, and they usually come in after the fact. They're usually not your co-founders, and that's what makes them a little bit more challenging.
Right.
But that was surprisingly difficult, and luckily we got through it alive and we have an amazing team now. And the last thing that's surprising is just how much you care about the tiny little things
mm-hmm.
that later on you look back and realize it doesn't really, at the end of the day, matter. The way I would describe this in tactical terms to help people get through day-to-day exercises is try the line, nothing is ever as terrible as it seems and nothing is as amazing as it seems. So
right.
when you're in a deal, for example, and you're like, this is amazing. You will find out in a few months that it typically, it's okay. It wasn't really as amazing as you thought. And then there'll be situations where you think the house is going to burn down, and it didn't. And it always, I constantly found this to be the case.
How do you stay like balanced between those two things, right? Like there's things that are going to be like, what did you do? And then there's going to be things like, oh wow, like you just said, there's those extremes. Yeah. Like how do you stay balanced?
So my emotions become a lot more tempered. You know, so in the beginning you let yourself ride the roller coaster. Once you're later on, you let yourself average out through the whole roller coaster. So you get a little bit more numb to things, which I think is kind of a bad thing sometimes, but it's good in that you're relied upon by your staff to be the guiding star in making sure that there's always a next step.
Yeah.
This is the other thing that I have to remind a lot of entrepreneurs and CEOs specifically, is your job is to do stuff, is to make decisions.
Yeah.
It's in your name, right? So you need to get things going. And so, meaning if there's a decision that your team needs to make and you don't have the full data, you still have to make the decision.
Right.
And if there's a fire and something went horribly wrong, you need to be the one who puts your head out and says, hey guys, everything's okay now. This is what we're going to do next. Even if you might not even know if that's the right next move.
Right.
And that's what makes this job so incredibly tough but rewarding.
Well, it's also like, I wrote recently, like, life is like a GPS, you know, and business. Like, even when you go wrong, like, the universe will kind of course correct you. So
sure.
You're just taking that best next step you think is right.
Yeah.
And, like, you're just a constant state of checks and balances along the
way. Yeah, and you set yourself up so that those who are redirecting you are there to redirect you for the reasons that are aligned to your own.
And there's another line of thinking around, there's a book called, I think, First Time Executive. And it talks about when you do hire C-level executives, setting up a for when. Because I think statistically, I forget what, it's a very large percentage that fail within the first year. Have you employed any tactics to help set up your C-level staff for wins, you know, when they...
Well, the solution, which I didn't actually get to talk about, was finding people to promote from within.
Right.
So I basically realized at some point that, especially for the type of profile company that we are, hiring someone straight into a C-level role is a recipe for disaster. Primarily because the expectations are so high for this person coming in, and both externally and internally,
right,
that...
Come on, do your magic, Blizzard.
Exactly. You expect them to be the panacea. You
right.
expect them to be the messiah. You expect them to be the solve-all. And you just it's just too much pressure. When you bring someone in, even at SVP, it's fancy pants title for just basically pre-C. You insulate them, actually. You protect them from that pressure from the board, from mm-hmm. customers, from everyone. You let them take the time to perform and earn it, too. And the other thing is you attract people into that role that are more doers. I'm not saying that all C-level people don't like to do things, but typically they're at the point in their career where they want to have the C-level title. That's one component to their incentive. And that's fine for everyone who is normal as a human being. We all
right.
love recognition. I mean, it's very normal. I'm not saying it's a bad thing or a good thing. But for the type of person you need or profile you need, sometimes having them grow within is extremely advantageous for everyone.
What's the vibe like at Keep? Like, what kind of company culture have you set up?
Yeah, you can kind of hear it and see it. I mean, we're it's just an amazing team. We're super tight-knit. I would like to say family, and we are. And we have multiple families too, because we were a New York team that has their own culture as well.
Polyamorous.
And, very polyamorous. sure, let's just put it that way. But we're, again, the culture is based on, think about it, serendipity, rewards.
Right.
Right? I mean, that's such a great thing to build moments. I mean, that's the whole thing. Our product reflects that, and then our people reflect that.
You were on the cover of Entrepreneur, and, you know, part of the story was about, you know, entrepreneurs changing the world. What does changing the world look like through Brian Wong's eyes? Like, what's your definition of it?
I think changing the world involves changing what was perceived to be a norm for something different that ends up making everyone's lives better. So it's still very vague, but in our world, because people don't need to see awful banner ads anymore, that actually might change their psyche and their happiness. And I'm not claiming that we're changing the world to scale that, like, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and trying to cure AIDS and things like that. That's a very different scale and level. But I think introducing change is really just to improve someone's life one by one in some way. And I think happiness is a big one. And we deliver a lot of that, to quote Tony Hsieh. And I think that's a big piece of what we want to bring to the world in our work.
That's awesome. One of your most recent tweets, what a killer month. 2016 starts off with a bang. So proud and excited of what we're doing. Define a killer month. What's a Keep killer month?
So we have a goal for revenue this quarter. We are already at 108% of that, and it's only the first month. So that was the reason why I said the month is a killer month.
So you're going to buy lunch then?
Yeah, exactly. But I think the other thing is our team has been waiting for this moment for so long. I mean, we are 5 years in. And yes, last year was great. Year before that was great. But in terms of just at that point where you are able to see that acceleration is right. Such an amazing moment for everyone. And it makes me almost so emotional to see my team see the rewards come and now know that what they were working on had that impact. And I think they are always did, but sometimes seeing hard numbers like that is truly, truly a meaningful thing.
How have you surprised and delighted your team? Like, is there like
all the time? We do events. We do it's events are a big way. gifts. You name it. We've definitely made a huge improvement in how we bring people out. I mean, we've taken the employees and their families. We take out the Mall of Great America a bunch of times a year, which is like Six Flags, which is awesome. Yeah. And then we last night our team went out to the Exploratorium and at After Dark, which basically means drinking and museum time, which is fantastic. And every South By, we like to call it sort of the big moment, because you know we have this different physical moments that we do a lot of digital moments with physical moments. And last year we had Sir Mix-a-Lot play. Year before that was Biz Markie. Year before that was Coolio. Coolio actually like took everyone to the rented house we had and cooked everyone.
I was hoping he cooked.
He cooked.
Amazing.
He cooked cooking with Coolio. He cooked. He went. We have this hilarious video of him in Whole Foods just going up and down buying ingredients for his huge spaghetti dish. So it was. There's a lot of moments to remember and surprises for our team.
Career wise, or just like how people perceive you, right? They go like, oh wow. He's done X, and he's like, who wows you? What's the thing that Brian Wong goes, oh yeah, that I wish that I could do that. Oh.
So I don't necessarily look at someone and wish to be like them. Sure. I think idolizing is more of a fantasy versus a constructive process. I think being inspired and being invigorated by the likes of the Bransons and the Musks of the world is a good thing, because you see them do it, you see it's possible from another human being, and it motivates you. Do I want to necessarily start my own private space flight company? No. But I do now know that at that level of scale, a human being can accomplish those types of things, and that's what makes it so admirable. So for me, it's really breaking down depending on where I am in my career and what I'm trying to accomplish. So for example, I have a book coming out this year. I can't say much more than that. And there's someone that has just figured it out. And
you heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, yeah. you can see more at brianiswritingabook.com.
Okay.
But there's a dude who just happens to have he just really gets it in terms of self-promotion, shameless, in a very positive way.
Right.
And at the same time, generating tons and tons of book sales. And this guy's the one and only Gary Vaynerchuk. So there's just and you just watch him and you're just like, man, this guy does an episode about himself every day called The Daily V. He Snapchats practically every 5 minutes. He answers every email that he gets. Everyone. Like, I've tested this. I'll email him like 3 times in 3 days, and he'll answer every single. They might be like nonsensical one word answers.
Have you seen my
yes. Yeah, he'll be like, hey, can you help me with this? Yes. Or like next time, or like, you know, it's so funny. And then he answers every tweet. He responds to every Facebook comment. He's just a machine, and he's a force of nature in that way. Now, is that my cup of tea? No. But you can inspire people to be so effective at just being active social media. He is the epitome of that.
Well, when you think about your personal brand, like Gary Vaynerchuk, like you said, it's on one very, like, the Gary V brand.
Yeah, he's right there, yeah.
You know.
And I have my own as well, right? And mine is, you know, you'll notice in my social media that I'm not extremely public about my personal life, right? I don't share every restaurant I go to or every concert I'm going to. And partly because of a personal belief. And that is, I try not to... I think that by sharing too much, you're letting people diminish the value of that experience for yourself. I had my first old man moment. I was at this concert last year, and I saw like these teen girls in front of me just watching the concert through the screen of their Snapchat capture. Right. And I was like, watch the fucking concert with your own with your own eyes. You have your own eyeballs. Use those. Don't use the camera. And it was such a shame. But this is the thing. So I don't like to share all those. But what I do like to do is make sure that every time I'm posting or every time I'm interacting that there's value. Yeah. Right? My whole belief is people are there to consume your media. Why? So that they can get something for themselves. It's not just for you to share your vanity. And that, to me, is crucial to how we orient everything that we do from a both social media standpoint to on a personal level.
Yeah. And you know, in the beginning or maybe even now, like, has there ever been a point where you felt like your personal brand was overshadowing Keep? Or, you know, did you have to... learn how to strike that
the
balance.
The fates have been so intertwined. It's one and the same in many ways. And there is no separation. It's just the same. Right. And it's been very beneficial in many ways. I mean, I can use my brand to always benefit the company. It's always perceived that one way. I don't use the brand the other way. And that's, I think, a way to draw a line to make sure that people around you know that you're there for all the right reasons. And people know this, very clear to them that I'm always using my ability to gather an audience or share a message to promote the hell out of my own company.
Right. Well, it's definitely like an extension of you, right?
This whole, it's an extension of me, but it's a vehicle that other people are in and that can benefit a ton.
Oh, 100%.
And my goal is to make sure that they benefit.
Yeah, and I think that's the cool part is that, the idea, like the concept of Keep is very much an extension of who you are as an individual.
Yeah.
So
and that's the best part about being an entrepreneur, right? your baby is a part came from you. There's a part of you in it, and that's the best part.
And so let's talk about that for a second, right? Because I think some people try to make smart businesses, right, versus doing things that are intimately, you know, connected to them.
Sure.
Is there a place for both of those things?
Absolutely. It's a lifestyle choice. It's what do you want to be when you grow up in that way, right? It's like what drives you, what motivates you, what helps you wake up in the morning. And if being incredibly efficient in building smart businesses that generate tons and tons of cash, great. If it's doing all that whilst having something that actually aligns to your morals, ethics, personal beliefs, then even better, right? And those are that I think is the holy grail for an entrepreneur. And so you're constantly striving for that. How can I mix business goals with something that actually makes me motivated every single day because I know I'm doing something that I actually believe in?
You love banging on the table, right? There's a lot of bass in there.
Yeah, sorry, sorry. Yeah.
No, it's okay. I just put some lyrics over
it. Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
as long as it's rhythmic.
Yeah, exactly.
let's talk about pivoting for us a quick second as we pivot in the interview. you know, I'm sure over your 5-year journey, there's been decisions you've had to make, and you're like, oh, that didn't work out. Like, how do you handle the, you know, pivots when they need to happen, and maybe give an example.
By not calling them pivots. So internally, we always look at, you know, sort of learning lessons as the way to perceive a lot of this stuff. You're always lucky enough to have learned that lesson, so you know not to make that mistake again. Mistakes are great as long as you only make them once. And that is... and I did not come up with that, but it is very true, right? You are totally fine from you're totally cool making mistakes, but as long as you don't make it again, you're good, right? So, and as long as it doesn't involve life and death, and in our business, luckily that doesn't happen that often. So that's how we look at it. And I think most people, unfortunately, are so anxious about making the right decision that there's inaction. And sometimes there's not enough time to make the right action. So those are issues that are easily fixed by making early decisions, and especially sometimes in releasing products. You don't have to release a perfect product. Just get it out there so that you know how people feel.
Right.
And those are all very important things.
And that happens at every step along the process too, I think. Like whether you're pitching, whether you have an MVP, whether you're like...
I A/B test my email subject lines even to this day, right? And and even my emails. And these are all things that you are constantly learning about. That's why when you have that learning attitude, you're never making the right or wrong decision. You're always learning.
Constantly curious. I guess when it comes to sort of the spark of innovation, right? 5 years ago, probably even before that, you were on this plane and you're like, aha. Like, how do you maintain that same sense of excitement, you know, 5 years later? And it's like you've grown, like you have other pain points now, but how do you keep your energy? And maybe this is just for anybody, like a rule of how to keep that spark.
Give yourself room. The problem with a lot of entrepreneurs is they suffocate themselves. They make themselves so busy. They pack their days. They don't give themselves any time to breathe. And by doing that, you will suck your own energy out of yourself. And the way to preserve it is take time. Now, I'm not saying go and F off and go to a party and go nuts. I'm saying, in a way, this is like meditation, but without the connotations attached to the process, is give yourself time to roam free mentally. So for me, this means sometimes giving myself Saturday completely off, right? I don't do any email. I don't have any phone calls. I try to even talk to people for most of the day. Seriously, I try to avoid in-person interactions. I'm talking like being by myself.
Right.
And that gives you time to think. Because on a day-to-day, I'm talking to hundreds of people. And there's no way for you to just take yourself back and just think about the right decision, sort of meditate about what you've done, and then think about new ideas.
Right.
So that is hugely important. Just give yourself that rhythm.
Do you meditate?
Officially, no. But like I said, like in a way, sitting on a plane for 14 hours is one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah.
Because I love not knowing that no one can bother me.
I do that all the time. Like, exactly. Yeah. Like, I love being on planes, and I'm a master swimmer.
Yeah.
So like, I'm going to practice 3 times a week, and I love swimming because I'm like face down in a pool. I can't hear anything, even compared to running.
Yeah.
Because like running, you're still like looking at the environment.
Yeah.
You're
there's still stimuli.
Car or run over my horse. I don't know what era I go.
And then that's also the other thing. You're either using a meditation where you're using it to use your brain to think about things, or you're using it to distract yourself from thinking about those things. So my version of your swimming is skiing. So when I ski, you don't focus, you're gonna like die, because you literally need to make sure you don't fall and kill yourself. And so that's why skiing is a great way for me to not think about work or that. Truly,
you're of death.
You're truly not able to think about it. Like, that's and people may say that sometimes that's why like crazy celebrities have to do drugs, because that's the only way they don't think about their insanity every day.
Right.
But luckily,
just
I found
don't do drugs this. And ski.
Yeah, just don't do those things.
Then get on the plane.
I don't condone any of those things.
The show is called Innovation Crush.
Yep.
Right. We talked about a lot of different things, concepts. I'm sure in your day to day business and being in Silicon Valley, you see like a plethora of ideas and stuff. What are you currently crushing on? Cultural, technological, food? I don't know.
Health, man. I just ran into, and again, we're near a sketchy area, so there's a lot of sirens. But maybe. the healthcare and actually preventative health. So there's a Google is working on this stuff. Lots of big tech companies are. There's traffic, so they're trying to get through the traffic, so they keep running the sirens to get through the traffic.
All right, we'll talk loud over this.
But the thing is, I think med school, by the nature of even the practice being called medicine, is so counterintuitive to the way that as humans we need to be taking a look at our own health.
Right.
Which is, it's all about the whole current practice and infrastructure is around after something's happened to you. Nothing's really been developed at massive scale infrastructure about making sure nothing does happen to you. And right now, this is a luxury only afforded to the rich.
Right.
You know, every billionaire has, you know, an army of people, from a dietitian to a doctor to a nutritionist to a trainer to you name it.
Right.
But for those of us who don't have the luxury of hiring an army of people to make sure that we don't get sick, what can we do using technology?
Yeah.
And this is everything from the collective data of the world.
Mm-hmm.
How, for example, can we take a look at every single potential stimuli that could lead to XYZ cancer, and then make sure that your genetic disposition towards that cancer is minimized because of your environment, how you change it, and the food you consume. So all these things are all now accessible with technology. It's just a matter of putting it in the hands of as many people as possible.
I like to think about like the idea of wearable tech as well. Like, you know, your Fitbit or
that's
whatever.
All related. Yeah.
But it's like it becomes a coach, right? Like socks, like SES, there was a company there called Sensoria.
Okay.
Right? And it measures the impact you have when you're running.
Sure.
From human durability, right? Like, if you adjust your stride this way, your knees will last
longer. Not to like wrap all of those things into one thing, but those are sensors. And I think the sensing technology we have today is so cheap and accessible that that's leading to the ability now to make true recommendations.
Yeah.
In the past, you know, sensing anything or even knowing what's going on was impossible. We did not have gyroscopes in our pockets until Apple came out with the iPhone. And so now we have that. Now we have those types of sensors that are at a price point that's accessible to most people.
Right. That's great. Complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is
creating the unseen.
Continue, expand a little bit.
There's a lot of things that you can't see or you've not seen that with innovation you invent out of thin air. And I think that's what innovation leads to. It leads to invention, right? And I think and so it's tough because the truly innovative products in the world sometimes are a combination of things that we've already seen. But then there's that those one or two things that come along in the world that no one's ever seen
before.
The
WTF thing, right?
Those things are ridiculous. That's true innovation.
Yeah.
But I think there's incremental innovation. There's always there's different categories of it, but I think true innovation is inventing these things that no one can see.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm so polite. I like your gold. What was it? Rose gold laptop?
Whatever. I'm Asian. I love gold stuff. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Where's Asian and gold core?
We love it. It's good luck. That's gold and red.
Honorary black, too.
Yeah, that, too. We could be honorary black.
Yeah, cool for you.
Listen, the cultural ramifications of gold and the red color in Asian and Chinese culture is good luck. And that's why during Chinese New Year, which is coming up, everyone gets these red and gold envelopes.
Well, Happy New Year.
Thank you.
How can people find you on the interwebs? Where do they go to see?
Well, our site is at
BrianIsWritingABook.com.
Well, BrianIsWritingABook.com is about the book.
Yeah.
That's where you can sign up for updates. But the site for the company is keep.com. That's KIIP.com. And my Twitter is Brian_Wong.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, everybody. This has been another installment of Innovation Crush. I'm your host, Chris Denson, and I will talk to you next time.